on the book of James, so we just started our new quarter. If you need to get those, you can get them now or on the way out. Either way, we'll be fine. Good to see you all out. Before we get started, Brother Rusty Weldon, would you lead us in prayer this morning, please, sir? All right. Yeah, we're starting the book of James today, so it's the introduction class as we get started with this third quarter. This is the second time I've taught James in the last couple of years, so we had I had some of this stuff already put together, which was nice, but then we're going to go back through and try to look at it anew. If you notice on the slide ahead of me and on the cover that you have, there's a couple of sources of some information that I use for preparing for the book of James. Also, if you go on our website, auchurch.com, those of you who are members especially, we got a new thing that Seth Humphrey and Ryan Hasty have really been heading up, and that's our adult class material. And Seth walked me through loading that up. So if you go to the first page there in the news and notes where it says the book of James taught by Ashley Miller, it's actually hot linked to the material. So I've got all the way through questions for class two on there. So if you get home, you don't know what's going on, there's a syllabus on there. That's my old teacher in me that wants a syllabus, the layout. It's on your handout as well. That way if you're wondering where we're at, if you're out of town or whatever, you can go on there at any time. Also, my email and phone number is on there, so feel free to let me know. As we study James this quarter together, I look forward. As it says on the board behind you, it says, test of faith, practical Christian living. The study of James is, I think, very practical in our day and age. And as we set up the introduction this morning, we're going to lay some of the groundwork that I think helps us as we decipher and as we understand some of the teachings that we learn in James, as we learn the context that they were written in and how they're applicable to our lives. James is sometimes referred to as the Proverbs of the New Testament. If you go through, you can almost point your finger at any point in the five chapters of James, and the topic seems to almost stand alone. It's very proverbial, very pithy, very to the point as we read James, and I think that's very good. I like that kind of teaching because it doesn't beat around the bush on what it's trying to tell us, and I think that in and of itself makes James very practical. In all, one of the writers I read said that there's 54 commands found in the book of James as we read through it and how it's practical to our lives. Having said that, we understand that the book of James has caused lots of controversy to those in the Christian realm through the years. If you know anything about history, Martin Luther was very opposed to the book of James. I'm not going to get into that a whole lot, but I think it's very interesting. Also, Brother Bruce talked about, what's the president, Brother Bruce, that cut out his Bible? Thomas Jefferson. I tried to find if he cut out James, but I couldn't figure it out. But I remember you've always mentioned that, where Thomas Jefferson went through, and you may know that from history, and actually cut out parts of his Bible. And a lot of people this day and age want to do that. And James is not a book that we can remove. And I think we all understand, just knowing a basic level of what James is about, is that faith leads us to works, right? That those two things are intertwined, and that the Christian world that we live in a lot of times wants to separate those two. And we understand, as it seems on the surface, that this may be opposed to certain things Paul tells us, especially in Romans, about faith and works and how they work together. We're going to talk about that through this class and how that we understand in context how those things actually work together. But as I mentioned, that the topics seem to stand alone. They actually all work together, and it talks about the testing of our faith and concerning true and practical religion, which I hope will be helpful to us. This class doesn't lend itself to as much conversation, but I hope you'll speak up this morning as I mentioned some of these. I know you haven't had the questions to really go over and to prepare for this class, but just to open it up, when you think of the book of James, what's one of the first things that comes to your mind? Okay, introspective caution, exactly. Talks about looking at your face in the mirror and then walking away. Absolutely. What else? Action, absolutely. We're going to talk about that this morning as well. What else? The tongue. Who said that? Nathan. Yeah, the tongue. That's one of the first things I think of when it talks about the tongue and how we need to guard that and how it's very difficult. And we've already mentioned again this morning faith and works and how those two things work together. It talks about the idea that even the devils or the demons have some sort of level of faith, and we're going to talk about that this morning. The few things that we're going to, kind of the introduction, we're going to talk about who wrote the book, authenticity, to whom did he write it, why did he write it, in a quick summary this morning, and then we'll go into our worship. All right, who wrote the book? Obviously, the New Testament is full of different Jameses, right? I think there's four that a lot of people bring out. James the son of Zebedee, James the son of Alphaeus, which both are what? They both were apostles, right? And we see that, you know, James the son of Zebedee was also known as what? The sons of thunder, right? Sons of thunder. We understand that this is more than likely not the James that wrote the book, nor is James the son of Alphaeus, which he was another one of the apostles that we see called in the in Matthew. And also, there's really no indication that he wrote it, and very little is known about this. And then James, the father of Judas the apostle, even less is known about him. If you want to know a reference, Luke chapter 6, verse 16 is where he's mentioned. Obviously, the most common one is James, the brother of our Lord, James, the brother of Jesus. Can you tell me anything that you know about James, the brother of Jesus, that's really interesting, one of the first things we learn about him? Turn to John chapter 7, verse 5. John 7, verse 5, the Gospel of John. John 7 and verse 5, it says, yet not even his brothers were believing in him, right? It doesn't mention James specifically. Obviously, we think he's probably part of this. But one of the first times we mention the brothers of Jesus is the fact that they were non-believing in him. And we probably understand that James was one of those that was not believing. But if you look in Acts chapter 1, also in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 7, I think that's a real key one. When Paul's teaching about the resurrection in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 7, he's given the account of who Jesus appeared to. Remember, he says he appeared to James, which seems to be his brother here, and he appeared to the other apostles. Very interesting. Could you imagine that interaction when Jesus, the resurrected Jesus, came and interacted with James? And we see that obviously helped in James's development as ultimately he becomes an elder and as he writes this message here. Also, if you study in your Bible, Acts chapter 15, we just did this with the kids in the in Missionary Journeys. Acts chapter 15, we understand we call that the Council at Jerusalem. James, this James, was a very important part of that if you read through the whole chapter of Acts. And also in Galatians chapter 2, verse 9, Paul refers to James as a pillar in the church there in Jerusalem, and we understand that he's an elder. He probably wrote this book, and we're going to talk about this just a moment, probably sometime between the year 42, 44 A.D. and around 60 A.D. And that's important as we kind of talk about a few things in just a moment. But one of the things I think is really interesting about the book of James is how much it refers back to the teachings of Jesus. Quickly look right here. Do you notice, you see, let me get ahead. I need to move on. That's one thing about PowerPoint. I don't stay with it. We see that here that James quotes Jesus a lot. Do you notice anything about these quotations here of where James quotes Jesus? Anything in particular about that? They're all from where? Matthew 5 through 7, which we refer to what? Sermon on the Mount, right? We understand that obviously that was one of the first recorded sermons of Jesus, but probably that was a sermon that Jesus taught all the time, right? That was basically very introductory, basic level teachings under Jesus. And we see that James quotes it so much, and I think that's why it applies to us so much, and that it's based in the fact that it comes directly from the teachings of Jesus. And you see those up here. Turn back to James chapter 1. And if we talk about a main theme in James, it's really hard to isolate it. But I think if we kind of try to do that, if you look at James chapter 1 in verse 22, it says, but prove yourselves doers of the word, and not merely hearers who delude themselves. Is there any greater lesson or challenge for us today as we are Christians in 2016 than to be doers of the word? I think that's really interesting. I was blessed to grow up in the Lord's church, and I've heard a lot of gospel sermons, gospel teachings, and it's really easy to hear, right? It's really easy to listen. And not that I know everything, I have certain basic level knowledge of what God expects of us. But where the rubber meets the road, right here it says, but prove yourselves doers of the word. It's when we leave here on Sunday and Wednesday evenings that we go out the rest of the 6 days of the week, 5, 6 days of the week, and live life, that we have to put those things into practice. And that's why James really hits us where we live. And I think that's why it's difficult for a lot of people. But you see, there's a lot of other teachings up here, and they basically come from the concepts or the teachings of Jesus, especially in the Sermon on the Mount. Now, as we kind of understand who James wrote it to, if you go back and you're already in James, look in chapter 1, verse 1, it says, James, a bondservant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes who are dispersed abroad, greetings. So who did James write it to? The Jews, right? 12 tribes dispersed abroad. Do you remember, again, studying the early church in Acts up till about chapter 8, from Acts 2, the first gospel sermon, Acts 8, who came on the scene in Acts 8 that was persecuting Christians? Saul, right? And that seems to be when the scattering took place. So we know that this book probably was written by James after Acts chapter 8, somewhere in that time frame when Paul came on the scenes, up until when Jerusalem was destroyed in AD 70. That's why a lot of people give it the date somewhere between 40-42, 62, which AD 70 is when Jerusalem was destroyed. And we understand that that's when this scattering took place. And James also, he was writing to the Jewish Christians scattered by persecution. And it's interesting, if you look at the things that are talked about, especially look down in verse 2, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials. We understand, too, as he continues in chapter 1, and chapter 2 talks about the sin of partiality, rich versus poor. We understand these Christians were very poor at this time, but they were struggling with their attitude in dealing with those trials. It's really easy for me to say that because I'm not, can't necessarily relate directly to what they went through, but I think it's very applicable to us to understand how the trials that they dealt with, what James told them their attitude should be. And that's really next week's lesson. We'll talk about that, but really it's our attitude when we struggle and deal with those type trials and tribulations. But understanding who James was writing to, and he was in position that James was stationed out of Jerusalem, and so he saw a lot of these Jewish brethren come through. He was in a position to be able to see these attitudes and these struggles and what they were dealing with as he talked to them. Obviously, too, we see this very general epistle. Let me move forward here. As an elder of the church, he could see their conduct as they came, as I mentioned. That this is characterized as a general epistle. Right? It wasn't directed to a specific individual or specific church as we see in other areas, but a general epistle that was written at this time in order to help them. And why did he write the letter? He wrote it because obviously there was no written word at the time, and the new converts needed these first principles and spiritual maturity, as we all understand, and they were under this heavy persecution that we already mentioned, as they were scattered abroad. And obviously during that situation, we can understand that it's very difficult to show patience, forbearance, and that they had a lot of Judaizing influences and obviously conflicts within the Christian brethren. So I think it's important as we look at our question three, who the book was written to and why is it important in understanding this message, is that we can kind of see and maybe understand to a certain degree the audience of James and then apply that as we kind of understand how that may apply to our lives and what we are dealing with and struggling with in different areas. And again, back to our main point, this message to James was, listen, you need to understand to be doers of the word. Do what you need to do regardless of the situation, which is a very good message for us. And then James is needed today. Because obviously the same issues that they were dealing with are the same issues that we deal with today. Hypocrisy, listening and not doing, improper use of riches. We respect our persons. It's very easy to go through that. Ruling God out of our plans. Remember he says in I think it's chapter 3 where he talks about our life is but a vapor. What a great message for us today, especially our young. Worldliness, half-hearted prayer life, inconsistency, and not helping others. But really what I want to spend the rest of the class on as we I kind of went through that relatively fast, as you can tell. What I really think is very important as we get into a study of James is our question four, and that's defining faith from a biblical perspective. If you notice, that's, I think, the caveat to defining faith, right? So what faith is to the world versus what faith is to Christians, two totally different things. And that's the battle. That's really where the rubber meets the road, and what James is trying to get past is, look, faith is the answer, right? But it's true biblical faith. And I think it's important for us as we lay the groundwork, as we introduce this concept of what is faith. So I really want to spend the next 20 or so minutes of our class time really establishing this concept. So faith, we can break it down a couple of different ways. I think one of the greatest areas that we actually turn to is Hebrews chapter 11 to define faith. If I open up the class, you probably would quote Hebrews 11 verse 1 to get a definition of faith, right? Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. And so that sounds very biblical in nature, right? But what does that mean? What exactly does that mean when you break it out? The assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. But I think to understand that, we actually kind of have to go back into what the Hebrew writer was actually leading up to as we get to Hebrews chapter 1. So turn back a page in your Bible to Hebrews chapter 10. And verse 19, as it leads up to this, it says, "Therefore, brethren," in verse 19 of chapter 10, "Therefore, brethren, since we have confidence to enter the holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way which he inaugurated for us through the veil, that is his flesh, and since we have a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a sincere heart and full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful." I'm going to stop right there because we always focus on 24 a lot, but it leads up. Verse 23 says, "Let us hold fast the confession of our hope." Remember the hope in chapter 11, verse 1, "without wavering, for he who promised is faithful." What makes our faith worth anything? From that verse, why is our faith worth anything? Because of who we have our faith in, right? Because of God's faithfulness. We can have faith in some of the most the wrong things, right? So if you had faith in me to build you a house, you would have your faith misplaced, right? That's not my job. That's not what I can do. Kind of understand that concept. Who you have your faith in is what really matters. That's what makes your faith worthwhile. Our faith in God is because of his faithfulness. And learning from a book like James and understanding faith and its foundation is the understanding that our faith is based in that God is faithful. I think that's very important as we lead into it. And I taught Hebrews not too long ago in the college class, and I said, who's the main character in Hebrews chapter 11? If you read Hebrews chapter 11, you have all these great people of faith. Who's the main character? It's God, right? God's the main character. And that should be true in our lives as we understand what faith is, that our faith needs to be in the source who really can provide faithfulness. And that our faith means nothing if it's not in the true source. So I think that's the first thing, that our faith is based in God's faithfulness, that we understand what is faith. But that really doesn't define it that well. So let's turn over to Psalm chapter 37. And to me, the very first thing that I think of faith kind of makes me think of, those of you that have children can understand this, and that's a kind of a trust level that your children have in you, right? So to me, the first element of faith is trust, right? So Psalm 37 in verse 3 says, "Trust in the Lord and do good, dwell in the land and cultivate faithfulness." And some of you may have the New King James Version. Somebody had the New King James Version, could tell me the second part of chapter 3, verse 3 of 37? Anybody New King James anymore? Feed on his faithfulness. I love that. I guess because we're in the South, I like terms that understand eating and drink. You know, that's something I can really relate to, right? But it says, feed on his faithfulness. It says, trust in the Lord and do good. Do you see the tied in action to trust in the Lord? There's tied in action that we not only trust in the Lord, but we do good. And I think that's very important, that faith is not only trusting, but it's also active and obedient. If you continue reading in Psalm 37, if you look in verse 4, it says, "Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord, trust also in him, and he will do it. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light, and your judgment as the noonday." And you continue reading, the whole psalm is very wonderful in understanding an element of trust in the Lord. So I think if we define faith, looking at this verse, looking at this example, is that faith is a trust in the Lord because he is faithful that can bring it to pass. And then I mentioned earlier, turn back to Hebrews chapter 10 and 11, that faith not only is trusting, but it's also active and obedient. If you look in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 38, it says, "But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him." And we'll talk a little bit more about this in just a minute, but this is a direct quotation from minor prophet Habakkuk. And Habakkuk in chapter 2, verse 6, this is quoted by God to Habakkuk, because Habakkuk, if you can go back and study it, we just studied this with Seth Humphrey in the minor prophet class. Habakkuk was basically having trouble saying, "God, what are you doing? There's a lot of things going on. If I'm looking at things kind of horizontally speaking, I don't really get what's happening." And is basically, he's bringing the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, down to perform a matter of judgment on the Israelite nation. And God says, basically to Habakkuk, the righteous live by faith. And it's really interesting to me that that's quoted three times in the New Testament, Romans chapter 1, in Galatians, and here in Hebrews chapter 10, to make the point that God's people have always lived by faith. That's what God has wanted from the very beginning, as people that live by faith. And really, to me, that's an interesting concept. It's like, okay, how do you live by faith, right? Is there ever an instance that you physically live by faith? What I mean is you preserve life by faith. Can you think of an instance where that may be the case? Because I don't look at faith as something that kind of preserves life physically, right? But can that happen? Is there an instance where you think that may be the case? You're smiling, Walker, so... Yeah, for those who can't hear Walker, he said there's times where we have physical struggles where we make and get through those by prayer. Brother Dave? Right. So life was preserved for Isaac in that situation. What about you and me? Again, there's no right or wrong answer here. I'm just kind of thinking through this. Is there ever by faith? And I think y'all made excellent points. That's why I like doing that. I was kind of thinking, too, along the lines of, hey, when the Bible tells us not to get drunk, not to be sexually immoral, aren't there certain commands that help preserve life in a physical nature? There is an element to that, right? I would say that the writer of Hebrews, Romans, and Galatians, and Habakkuk, that's a very small part of what they're talking about. But go back and look in Habakkuk. If you look and he tells them, my righteous live by faith, he told them when the Chaldeans come, do y'all remember what he told them to do? He said to run. So if they stayed in fault, what would probably happen to them? By faith, they didn't run. So they preserved life by running, right, in a physical nature. So that, I think, has a greater spiritual meaning in what we do by faith than living our life. And I say that, if you look in verse 39 of Hebrews chapter 10, it says, but we are not those who shrink back to destruction, but those who have faith to the preserving of the soul. And he talks about this in context of having endurance. Our life of faith is not a one-time snapshot. All of us in here have had triumphs of faith probably at one point or another in our lives, right? But the long term of faith is an endurance run, right? It's a life that we live by. We make decisions daily by that. And it says here, we are not those who shrink back to destruction. I kept thinking, we're in a drought right now, basically. Those of us who have grass that we want to be green and have flowers, we understand the concept of shrinking back, right? You see a flower, your grass that's really shrinking back and just is in need and just dying right now. Well, this is making that point into people. Have you ever seen people that do that? I mean, they just kind of wither up, not physically, but spiritually. They just are shrinking back. And it says that our faith, if we live by faith, God, we trust in him that our life is going to be one that he fulfills those things. That doesn't make it easy, but as we look in that in context of the things we're going to be studying and consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, the concept of that, and we'll talk about this next week, how do you do that? Like, I look at my life, and I've been very blessed not to have trials that I think, man, these are really rough. I look around, and I say, man, there's a lot of Christians that are dealing with some very difficult situations. I think of Terry and Ann Benton losing their son that's a year younger than them. What a trial to go through. I can't imagine dealing with that. But God says, consider it all joy because by faith we live our lives that we can kind of see through that. And I think that's what this is all about, is having a perspective to say, whatever I'm dealing with, I live by faith and I push through it. And that's what James is teaching these people that are dealing with these struggles at this time. And I think that's important for us when we learn about faith, is that not only does it trust, but our trust in the Lord leads us to action and obedience. And that's what chapter 11 is all about. The verses there are by faith, and then it's an action, right? By faith, so-and-so did this. By faith, so-and-so did this. So that needs to be part of our lives is that by faith we do this or that or don't do this or that. Brother Bruce, did you have your... Great point. I don't know if you all heard Brother Bruce, but he just was talking about these people of faith and how they look through that lens of faith to see the future. Anybody else? Yes, sir, Brother Day. Right, absolutely. And it's hard in the midst of those issues to do that at times, but it's very important for us to be able to go through those. Excellent point. And I like the point you made of Peter and that he walks on the water. The other one I like of Peter is when the Lord comes to him, preaches in the boat, and he tells him to cast out. Remember, he'd been fishing all night. And, you know, Peter is the fisherman, right? He says, there's no fish to be caught, and he cast his nets out. But he did that. That's an act of faith. It made no sense to him, right? Made no sense to let's go fishing again, Lord, but he was able to have a wonderful catch. And Jesus used that as a greater spiritual meaning, and they would be fishers of men, and that the catch was great. So, anybody else? The third element of faith I think is important, and we've already touched on these verses, is that it's a true commitment. We have faith is a trusting in God, it's active and obedient, and obviously it's a true commitment. As we talked about in Hebrews 10:38, if you go back and look, it says in verse 36, for you have need of endurance so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. And we understand that this concept is a true commitment. It's an endurance race. It's something that continues on. And that's why, to me, seeing, say this carefully, people of age that are faithful, how encouraging that is, right? They've been battle-tested. They've been through it. They've seen it all just about, but they are still faithful to the Lord. And that's why those that have been through life can be such an encouragement to us that are still struggling and still going through different facets of our life that we understand, look, they've been there, they've done it, and I think that's why it's very important. As we move on to, I want to make one other point. If you look in Hebrews chapter 11, this always is very interesting to me when we talk about living by faith. It says in verse 33, it says, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, attained promises, shut the mouth of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrections, and others, let me stop right there. Those few verses, those are all great victories, right? Those are good things. I want to be part of that part of faith, right? So that seemed fun. Then you go on in verse 35, it says, others were tortured, not accepting their release so that they might obtain a better resurrection. Others experienced mockings and scourgings, yes, also chains and imprisonments. They were stoned in two, they were tempted, they were put to death with the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated, men of whom the world was not worthy. Understand that part, I don't really want part of that, right? I mean, that doesn't sound as fun doing that by faith. But it's really interesting to me, in the same, within about four or five verses, somebody by faith escaped the edge of the sword, while later, a couple of verses later, somebody by faith died by the edge of the sword. I think it's very important when we live in a world that puts religion in this where you're going to have success in life, everything's going to smooth out. That's not really what biblical faith necessarily promises us. Because we see here that there's people of old, of faith, that at times they escaped the edge of the sword by their faith. They did what the Lord told them, and they escaped the edge of the sword. There was others that by faith lived their life, and they were put to death. So that's not the promise to us, right? And we're getting into a day and age where that's becoming a little more real, right? I think about what's going on in the world around us and how we should react as Christians. And the truth of the matter is we should just be living by faith and understanding what God tells us to do is what we need to put to practice in our life. All right, got a few more minutes. Anybody else? And we're going to make a couple of closing comments, Matt. Absolutely, and that's what he says. An untested faith is no faith at all, basically, right? Good point. Excellent point. Brother Bruce? And that's our goal through worshiping together and learning, and is to have a higher plane of vision and to kind of see through what we deal with on this earth to see what truly is coming. I want to end talking about what does our faith give us. And you can open up your Bibles there to Hebrews 10 and 11 again. As we kind of, if we've defined faith by trusting in the Lord, being active and obedient and having a committed life, faith gives us certain things that makes our life now worth living, right? So faith has an ultimate goal, as we see in chapter 11, verse 1, that it's the assurance of things hoped for, the convictions of things not seen. Our faith is because we see what heaven's going to, that hope that we have of heaven. But it does give us those things that we talked about in verse 38, that the righteous shall live by faith. Life, it gives us life worth living, right? Faith truly gives us life worth living. I see people that go through different things and have no basis of faith in God, and I don't understand exactly how they do that. It's very difficult if you have no perspective of something greater. Also, if you look in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6, put 2 in here, but it's verse 6. If you look in Hebrews 11, verse 6, it says, "And without faith is it impossible to please God." So I like to turn that on the positive. By faith, what? We are pleasing to God, right? So if without faith you can't be pleasing to God, by faith we can be pleasing. If you think about that for a minute, being pleasing to God is a really interesting concept to understand, right? So I can understand how I'm pleased by different things, right? So if my kids do something good, that pleases me. I'm happy. It's kind of an uplifted type concept. But the Bible speaks a lot about us being pleasing to God. And here it says that our faith is pleasing to God. And again, I think this is an excellent point. Here it says, "For he who comes to God must believe that he is," believe that he is and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. That goes back to the point that our faith is in God's faithfulness. Not only God is able, the concept is God is able, but he's also what? Willing. He's not only able, but he's willing. I think that's two important elements of it. And then in verse 2, back to verse 2, it says, "For by men of old they gained approval." Kind of goes, ties hand in hand to being pleasing to God, that we are approved by God by our faith. And then 1 John chapter 5, we just studied this with Brother Bruce. 1 John chapter 5 in verse 4. If you notice there, Hebrews 11, I think it's around 38, there's kind of that parenthetical statement that says, "men of whom the world is not worthy." That statement's always been really interesting to me, that it speaks of people of faith are not worthy of the world, right? That concept's kind of interesting. Okay, what do you mean people of faith are not worthy of the world? But I think it's answered here. If we read in 1 John chapter 5, let's pick up in verse 1. It says, "Whoever believes that Jesus is the Christ is born of God. Whoever loves the Father loves the child born of him. By this we know that we love the children of God, when we love God and observe his commandments. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. For whatever is born of God overcomes the world, and this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith." Isn't our faith kind of lifts us up on top of the world, right? Not in a physical sense, but we kind of get above the junk that the world has to offer. And that's by following what God has told us to do. We see in the first part of chapter 5, we see the love of God wrapped up with the commandments of God, wrapped up with obedience, wrapped up with faith. It's kind of this all-encompassing concept of what a Christian life should look like, and that we understand that his commandments, again, and I think it's key to point out in verse 3, are not burdensome. The things that we deal with now that God, he directs us in, are for our good. And that it's very important here that our faith ultimately gives us the concept that it's the victory that helps us overcome the world. Obviously in the life to come, but also now, and that we're able to kind of rise above some of those things. Thank you for your kind attention this morning. I think the first bell has rang. We're going to pick up next week. And again, the questions are on there. And we'll use the questions for framing it up. Don't spend a lot of time and effort on those. Come with your comments. But James chapter 1, 2 through 12, I think are great verses as we kind of get into this study that we can spend a lot of time on when we talk about the concepts that's laid out there for us. Thank you again.